Welcome to another episode of Public Health Speaks. Public Health Speaks is a podcast series brought to you by the National Public Health Information Coalition. With each episode, we explore the successes and challenges in public health communications and ways to tackle the most pressing issues facing federal, state, and local jurisdictions. I'm your host, Olivia Biggs. Joining me today is Brent Ewig, Chief Policy and Government Relations Officer. He monitors the immunization policy landscape and develops resources to support the Association of Immunization Managers members in engaging in effective policy development. Welcome, Brent.
Glad to be here.
It's great to have you. And we have an interesting topic today to discuss, something I think public health communicators are tackling these days. We're going to discuss both why and how immunization managers and public health communicators, such as public information officers, should collaborate to improve immunization policy outcomes. So to start us off today, can you tell us a little bit about immunization policy in general, and also a little bit about the Association of Immunization Managers, the organization?
Sure. I'll start with a little bit about AIM, the Association of Immunization Managers. Like NIFIC, we are an ASTO affiliate. We represent the 64 funded, CDC-funded immunization program jurisdictions, so all the states, the district, the territories, and a handful of large cities. And we have a simple vision that's simply a nation free of vaccine-preventable disease. So it's a lofty goal, but something that was really inspiring to us. And as far as immunization policy, we've certainly been in the spotlight since the beginning of the pandemic. But I kind of like to tell the story that before the pandemic, most people were familiar with immunizations in the context of being routine childhood immunizations. And they were called routine for a reason. Most parents happily vaccinated their kids as part of school entry. And we had very high childhood immunization rates, above 90% for the most common diseases. With adults, we've always had a little more challenge there, and flu sometimes hovering around half and for half of the recommended population for adults and lower for some of the other routinely recommended adult vaccines. So we know we've got work to do there and some opportunities to build on the momentum coming out of COVID.
Great. Thank you. That's a great way to describe and explain AIM and a little bit about immunization policy. And kind of like you just mentioned, I want to start with the elephant in the room, which is COVID, the pandemic. So how has the ongoing pandemic affected your job in immunization policy?
Yeah, I always like to start with the positive. So here's the bottom line. The COVID vaccination campaign has been largely a tremendous success. The numbers as of last March, there's a Commonwealth Fund analysis, over 2.2 million lives saved, 17 million hospitalizations prevented, and over $900 billion in avoided healthcare costs. So those results speak for themselves. But obviously, there's been gaps, and there's things that we need to learn and do better next time. And there's been tragedy. I had a chance to talk with former CDC Director Tom Frieden and asked him how he would kind of frame the COVID vaccination campaign. And he said, if for those who've taken the vaccine, it's a triumph. And for many of those who haven't, it's been a tragedy.
Yeah. And speaking about some of those challenges, what are some of the current communication challenges in particular about immunization policy?
Sure. Two main things. One is we know that there's COVID fatigue out there across the nation. And so that makes it a much more difficult to reach people with key messages. And that's been pretty well documented. And the second is a clear erosion of trust across all sectors of society, but particularly acute for public health. The good news here, there's good data tracking from Kaiser Family Foundation. People continue to trust their physician or their healthcare provider for information on vaccines, over 80%, whereas for trust in the CDC and state and local health departments, by extension, has declined substantially because of the pandemic.
And that's a really great point you just brought up. I have a couple of follow-up questions to that. You mentioned how the public is a little bit worn out of vaccination and immunization. How can you partner with public health communicators, public information officers, to communicate these vital messages about immunization and the policies that come along with them?
Yeah, I think we need to adapt. We need to acknowledge the tougher environment that we're in. I think one of the key messages is that we may be done with the virus, but the virus perhaps isn't completely done with us. When we're hovering around 300 deaths a day, that comes to 2,100 a week. I mean, that's approaching a 9/11, not quite a 9/11 every week, but we need to have a conversation. Is that tolerable? Is that something that we can accept in this society when we have the tools to prevent it? And so I think that's the key, is talking about the tools we have now that we didn't just a year or two ago, and not having a failure of imagination and finding new ways to reach the people that we need to reach.
That's great. And so we talked a little bit about the general public and reaching them, but I want to pivot to addressing some of the groups like anti-vaxxers. So how can public health communicators, I'm including myself in that group, work with immunization managers to approach those groups with some best practices?
Yeah, this has been an immense challenge, and not limited to the U.S. The year before the pandemic, as you probably are aware, the World Health Organization declared vaccine hesitancy one of the top 10 global health threats. So it's a global phenomenon. And I think in the past, there has been a clear split in thinking on how to address this. There's been a sense of not engaging directly with the anti-vax community because that gives them more oxygen, more of a platform, and spreads their message farther than it would on its own. I know Peter Hota is a vaccine champion down in Texas, and others have challenged that notion and said, you know, unless we're losing to the bad guys, we're letting this information go unchecked, and we need to be more aggressive in correcting misinformation. As far as best practices, this is tricky. And I think it's that, you know, we got to keep empowering trusted messengers in the community and try to give them a bigger megaphone than the others. And then there's the issue of social media, which gets into tricky issues of First Amendment rights and what we're seeing, you know, play out day by day on the Twitterverse, on what should be acceptable and not acceptable as far as the correcting of misinformation that spreads quickly online.
Yeah, absolutely. Social media is a beast in itself. What are some other groups and partner organizations, maybe like government liaisons, that public health communicators and immunization managers should also collaborate with when working to improve immunization policy?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, Olivia, because what we've seen at the state level is a wave of anti-vaccine legislation, hundreds and hundreds of bills introduced in the last session and expected again this year. So the state legislative liaisons are another key part of a three-legged stool between immunization program managers, the PIOs, and these legislative liaisons, I think, to strategize in advance. What do we anticipate? What are going to be the key messages to refute some of the worst of these bills? And really rely on the expertise of each of those groups. The immunization program managers have that subject matter expertise in immunizations. Obviously, communications folks are experts there. And the people, we really need to rely on their fingers on the pulse of the legislative process to know when that many bills are being introduced. The reality is some of them are message bills and aren't going to get much traction, and others may get moving and have hearings. And so having trusted colleagues that can help us navigate which bills are moving and which are just simply message bills that can largely be ignored is important.
Those are great examples. Thank you. And as a public health communicator myself, I'll have to make sure that I do my due diligence in alerting the public on those items as well. I'm not sure if they're aware of that. Before we wrap up today, I did want to touch on the subject of disparities in vaccination rate. Do you have any guidance for public health communicators on that?
Yeah, to share our success, because with COVID vaccine, it's been a great example where the Biden administration came in, put equity as a central focus, central to their leadership, and then backed it up with investments, at least $300 million that were going to trusted community groups that could help with that outreach and education. And happy to report that as of today, the Hispanic vaccine rate for COVID vaccine is actually higher than that of whites, and the gap between Blacks and whites has narrowed substantially from the early days. Clearly, still a lot of work to do. We came over a lot of historic distrust within certain communities of color. And so I think there's a lot of momentum to build on and to spread that out to all vaccines where other gaps continue to persist unacceptably.
Yeah, that is some great news to finish up this podcast today. And exactly, just knowing there's more work to do, never ending work as far as immunization awareness goes. Yes. So you did speak about some resources that AIM may have for public health communicators. Do you want to give a plug to your website here?
Sure. In the past, we've collaborated with NIFIC to put together a tip sheet for PIOs and immunization program managers. We've put together a paper called Connecting the Dots that kind of tries to centralize a number of helpful resources. And then our website in general can help link people to who the immunization program managers are in their jurisdictions and the very latest news on what's happening in the world of immunizations.
Great. Thanks so much for joining us today, Brent, and your discussion on immunization. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Olivia. And I want to wish you a happy Public Health Thank You Day this week and happy Thanksgiving as well as we record this.
Thank you. And same to you.